morning is 2012-1208, Mondes Technology against Anhui Precision, TPV International, and others. Mr. Hacker.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, John Hacker for Appellant TPV. I'll try to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, if I may.
Yes.
Your Honors, this case involves a completely clear settlement agreement, a completely clear dismissal order, and are pursuant to that agreement, and completely clear law governing both the agreement and the order. The settlement agreement provided for dismissal of, quote, all claims to resolve the lawsuit. There were no carve-outs, no caveats. The dismissal order, in turn, dismissed all claims with prejudice. No carve-outs, no caveats.
Paragraph 1.7 of the settlement agreement specifically excludes computer monitors. What it says, for example, monitors or other display products of the top Vickery companies and their affiliates are not televisions.
Right.
Okay. What extrinsic evidence do you have in the record that the intent of the parties was anything other than excluding computer monitors?
Well, there's no need to turn to the extrinsic evidence, Your Honor, because that provision is absolutely clear. It's referring to exclusion of computer monitors from the TV license. It's unambiguous. That's what it's talking about. The aspect of the agreement that's relevant to the computer monitors isn't about the license, because no license was required. There's already a license for the computer monitors. The only dispute involving the computer monitors was just a dollars dispute. It was not about the license that was addressed in the TV part. So that language excludes monitors from the TV license. What's relevant in both the settlement agreement and the dismissal order is the dismissal of all claims with prejudice. The preamble.
There was a formal order staying the monitor claims, correct?
Right.
Was that stay ever formally lifted before the dismissal was entered?
No.
So technically there was no live claim to be dismissed.
No, Your Honor, with respect, when the claims were stayed, that doesn't mean they don't exist anymore. They're just stayed and they're not addressed in the civil litigation. They're to be addressed in arbitration. But the court retains jurisdiction to do precisely this, to dismiss the case, dismiss the claims, if they are resolved through settlement, which they were here.
And under the Fifth Circuit's decision in Alford, isn't dismissing arbitrable claims appropriate once they're the only claims left in the lawsuit?
You can do that for dismissal with prejudice, but subsequent authority in the Fifth Circuit makes clear that you need to dismiss with prejudice and specifically order arbitration if you want to preserve the claims for later arbitration. The Huntsman case by Judge Rosenthal, I think, is the best example of that. But what all of those cases are saying is, consistent with the unambiguous rule, and there's really no ambiguity in the precedents in the Fifth Circuit and in this court, the leading case in the Fifth Circuit is the Oreck case, which says that when you dismiss claims with prejudice, that has claim preclusive effect, unless you expressly state in the dismissal order that you're reserving some claims for future litigation. And that makes perfect sense, because the whole point of those cases is to avoid precisely the dispute we have before us today, where the parties, by all accounts, by everything that appears from every word that they exchange between them, they agree to a complete dismissal of all claims, not certain claims, not the claims that were involved in the license, but all claims with prejudice.
Well, how do you respond to the fact that in the settlement agreement, the release is only limited to the television claims and not the monitor claims?
Because the release only needed to be limited to the television claims, because the dispute with respect to the monitor claims, as I say, was the dollars dispute arising out of the Philips purchase. Once you get a dismissal with prejudice, the release follows as a matter of straightforward claim preclusion principles. You don't need a written release, because if you get a dismissal, you get preclusion.
Are you saying the parties actually negotiated to wrap the monitor claims up into the settlement?
I'm saying that's what the settlement agreement says, for sure.
Okay, it doesn't say that expressly. So why, if you're so sure that this was intended to put everything to bed, why didn't you have it say that?
Because the cases say the opposite, Your Honor. That's exactly the argument that was made in the Pateev case. That you could have said, we will litigate, we are expressly allowed to, or future litigation is precluded. You could have said that. That was exactly the argument the party seeking to deny preclusion said. And this court, in Pateev, said, no, you've got it backwards. That's just the opposite. If you want to preserve the right to litigate other claims, existing claims in the case, that has to be expressly stated, because that's the way you avoid exactly this kind of dispute. If somebody wants to not dismiss all claims with prejudice, the last thing you would say, the last words the parties would agree to in a settlement agreement, in dismissal, would be, we dismiss all claims with prejudice. What you say is, you know, certain claims with prejudice, or the claims subject to the license are dismissed with prejudice. What they said is all claims, and again, Pactiv by this court, and Oreck by the Fifth Circuit, which is the governing precedent here, say if you want to accomplish that result, if a party in Modus' position has claims that wants to pull back and reserve from the scope of a complete dismissal with prejudice, it has to expressly state that so that you avoid exactly the problem that we have today.
I guess I'll now ask you a question. And your answer was, well, that's what the agreement says. She asked you if you negotiated it.
Right. But there's no extensive evidence as to what anybody negotiated. That's not in the record. Neither party put it here. So what I'm saying is, all I can speak to, all that I would be allowed to speak to, is what the agreement says. And the agreement says, we have agreed. There's a payment term. You can see it at page 395 of the joint agreement. That's many dollars. It's confidential, so I won't say it here. But that payment term doesn't say, in consideration for the license for television, it just says we're going to pay a huge sum of money. And then there's a dismissal with prejudice of all claims. Again, the monitor claims are just money claims. They're just how much
right. Well, that's right. I mean, in fact, that's one of the arguments that your friend on the other side makes pretty forcefully, and that is that to the extent that patent infringement claims are dismissed with prejudice, it doesn't matter because what existed as of that point in time was a separate contract where you would arbitrate just dollar numbers. So how do you respond to that, that dismissal with prejudice of patent infringement claims is meaningless as it relates to the monitor agreement?
A couple of points, Your Honor. First of all, it's settled that when the case is stayed, the court retains jurisdiction over the existing claims. They hadn't been dismissed. These are the monitor claims. That those claims stayed before the court to be addressed later, however the court might need to address them. This is how the court needed to address them, was just to to dismiss those claims. To the proposition that this is a new claim, that's answered again by perfectly settled, unambiguous Fifth Circuit precedent, which is that you apply the same nucleus of operative facts test to determine whether or not it's some sort of new or different claim. These arise out of the same facts. And here's how Mondes described it. Here's how Mondes described the situation in their opposition to our stay motion. They said, the parties agreed to arbitrate the claims relating to the Philips monitor business. So it wasn't like it was new claims and new contracts arisen. All that was an agreement was a private agreement to resolve the existing claims.
Well, and it wasn't purely a private agreement. I mean, it was an agreement under the auspices and authority of the mediator that was then endorsed by the court, right?
Oh, yes. I mean, it was a serious agreement. I'm not trying to undercut the idea that we, the parties, had agreed to arbitrate the claims. My point is simply that they had agreed to arbitrate the claims in the lawsuit through a certain set of protocols, which parties are free to do, but then they rescinded that. They supplanted it by agreeing to dismiss all claims with prejudice. And I don't see how one can read the plain terms of the settlement agreement, even more important, the plain terms of the dismissal order, and lay those against cases like Oreck in the Fifth Circuit, cases like Pactiv in this circuit, which say, if you want to reserve the right to litigate claims that are part of the lawsuit, if you think part of those claims, some of those claims, can be litigated again in the future, it's a very straightforward way of doing it. There's no mysteries here. There's no gotcha. You just expressly state it. You say, these are the claims that we want to reserve the right to litigate, whether it be an arbitration or some other.
Yes, of course that would have been clearer. So here we have the trial judge with the same parties before it saying that they had a different intention in entering into this agreement. And with the arguments of both of us as to what each of you intended, the court proceeded, declined to stay the arbitration. We agreed with that. I assume the arbitration is proceeded on the schedule set. Does that moot this entire debate?
A couple of things, Your Honor. First of all, it doesn't moot the debate. And I'll explain why. Just to go to the premise of the question, it was a different judge. The judge that presided over the settlement was not the same judge. The case had been transferred to a new judge.
But the first judge, Judge Ward, had reached some quite firm conclusions which were not changed by his successor.
No, the first judge didn't reach, the judge who presided over the settlement agreement didn't reach any conclusions as to its preclusive effect. He made no decisions whatsoever.
No, well, I'm talking about the first judge who looked at it, Judge Ward, is that right?
I think that's right.
And heard each side say that they had a different intention when they entered into this agreement. They reached a conclusion as to what he thought was the appropriate interpretation of an agreement that could have been clearer, as we've been saying, and as my colleagues have pointed out, if the intention was to omit or include a substantial liability, it should have been referred to.
I guess all I was addressing was the idea, maybe implicit in what I thought was a question, that there was some deference owed to that judge who sort of could see what the parties were doing. It was a different judge, and either way, so this court is in the same position as the second judge, just reading the documents. That's the only record before us. There's no subjective sense. There's no extrinsic evidence.
I'm not so sure that that makes sense, but that was really a prologue to asking whether the entire situation is now moot, because the arbitration has proceeded.
And the answer is it's not moot because we have preserved and this question before the arbitrator, whether or not the arbitrator had power to do this because it's claim precluded. This court's prior ruling, I assume it was a different panel, addressing the jurisdiction of this court to address the case, has already resolved the question whether there's jurisdiction to decide this case now because there's been a final order with respect to arbitration in the trial court. It's before this court now. It's not mooted. It will come up, could come up later if this court doesn't address it now, but either way, it will come before this court, this question whether the settlement agreement, which unambiguously dismisses all claims with prejudice, precludes the subsequent arbitration. And if I may, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time.
Okay.
Thank you,
Mr. Hack. Mr. Black.
May it please the court. Let me address the mootness issue first, because I think it's an important one here. The status of the arbitration is that all the evidence is in, the case has been submitted, closing arguments took place on January 18th, and under the JAMS rules, a decision is due by February 17th, and the arbitrator indicated that he would render a decision within that time frame. That was his expectation.
And that's subject to whatever is decided here?
I assume that if your honors ruled that the arbitration could not go forward, that the arbitrator would respect that, but it's not technically subject to anything. The form of action here is a little unusual. It's a motion, post-judgment motion, to enjoin Mondes from proceeding with the arbitration. There's nothing more that Mondes has to do with the arbitration. The arbitration record is closed. We're just awaiting a decision. The issue of arbitrability was within the arbitrator's jurisdiction under the JAMS rules, and TPV presented the issue of arbitrability and this very issue that's before us today to the arbitrator, who decided to proceed with the arbitration. Once the arbitration is over, we may need to seek confirmation of the arbitration, but at that point, the standard would be different. It would be the standard for review of an arbitration award, which is what we bargained for in the first instance when we entered into an arbitration agreement.
Well, are you going back and re-arguing the issues that were before the motions panel? I mean, are you saying that this is still just an appeal from a denial of an injunction and that it's not the final order that our motions panel described it as?
I'm just addressing the issue of mootness. Things have moved along since the motions panel decision. We've had now submission of the evidence, conclusion of the arbitration, and we're just awaiting the award. But the form of action here is a motion to enjoin an arbitration, which is now, for all intents and purposes, concluded.
All right. Well, let's get to the substance of the debate. I mean, there seems like there's enough sloppy on both sides here to a lot going around on both sides. I mean, for instance, why didn't you, under 60B, ask the judge to amend the dismissal order if there was some question as to the breadth of the dismissal order?
If we had not persuaded the judge to rule in our favor, we would have moved under 60B. We were confident that we were not going to need to do that, and in fact, we did not. The district court found that not only were we correct, but that their attempt to avoid the arbitration was a, quote, attempt to be unjust and a gotcha approach to res judicata, with which we
agree. Well, it's a little unclear from the record as to who seemed to have been gotcha'd in this process. So was this, I mean, why didn't you carve out the monitor claims if you really thought that this was not supposed to apply to the monitor claims?
Well, let me give you the context here. So we filed a lawsuit against TPV relating to televisions and the unlicensed Philips monitor.
Yeah, we have the context down. You can assume we know the context.
Everything was, the district court severed the issues. There was a ruling from the district court. They attempted, after we entered into arbitration, to get an order dismissing the entire case. The district court said no. The televisions are still in the case. all parties have agreed that the monitor issues can be severed because they're going to arbitration. I'm going to...
But you didn't actually seek arbitration. You didn't actually make the formal request for arbitration until after the dismissal.
That is correct. We did not make the formal demand for arbitration until after.
So why shouldn't we assume that you know, after everything that went on and you set aside some claims and tried others, that in the end, that there was an assumption that you were walking away from everything?
The settlement took place in the middle of a trial. We picked a jury on Monday. There were 200 defendants. On Tuesday, we got a knock on the door and said, let's see if we can get this settled. The thing that was on the table, the pretrial order, the issues that were going to be tried, and the issues on which we were about to go to final judgment on, which would have ended that case, all related to televisions. At no time is there anything in the record, or did they ever ask for a release from the arbitration agreement, which was a separate claim, a contract claim, that they had to answer for. They did not obtain a release for it, they did not obtain a license for the Philips monitors, and there was not an issue which was going to be tried. We went to the district court and reported that the case had been resolved. The district judge said, thank you very much, TPV, you can go home. And we went to trial against the other defendants and prevailed. We then wrote the settlement agreement. We very carefully gave them exactly what they were entitled to, which was a license and a release for televisions. I think Your Honor pointed to the release language here. That's 3. Really important.
3.
Sorry,
paragraph 3.3 of the settlement agreement.
Yes, Your Honor. Paragraph 3.3 says that no party shall seek any judicial or government resolution without first meeting and negotiating good faith with the other party. That did not happen. There's no evidence that that happened in this case. Fundamentally, they did not. We had a contract which created, it's like a settlement agreement. There were no patent infringement claims in front of the district court other than sort of vestigial jurisdiction for arbitration if infringement claims became live again. What we have is what you have once you settle a case. A contract claim to pay money. The amount of money that was going to be paid was going to be determined based on 2 stylized arbitration questions. It's a separate claim. That claim, if we had taken that arbitration agreement and tried to bring that claim, say, in, I don't know, Delaware or some other court, there would have been no federal jurisdiction over that claim because it's just a contract claim. No patent law issue that was going to be decided there. This is more like a settlement agreement where the claimant issue for money, for the payment of money, would not be extinguished based on the dismissal of the case.
You still have to answer my question, though. I mean, why not expressly carve it out? Were you hoping that they wouldn't think about it, or were you afraid, or was it the other way around, that they were hoping you wouldn't think about it? I mean, everybody knows that it's the elephant in the room. Why wasn't it discussed?
In our view, Your Honor, honestly, it was not the elephant in the room. In our mind, the claims relating to computer monitors had been sent to arbitration. They were in a different court. They were in a different location. They were not in front of the district court anymore.
Well, they weren't pending in arbitration because you hadn't made the arbitration request yet.
That's true. But
all you had was an agreement that said you would eventually arbitrate something.
That's right, an agreement which was never negated, novated, or in any way released. We have release language in the agreement which covers only televisions and not monitors.
Well, that's what bothers me about your opponent's case, is that, 1.7, in which you define out computer monitors. And he says that's not what you folks had in mind.
It is very clear to us what we were doing. We had a trial that was in front of us. We were busily getting ready for trial. We already picked the jury on a Monday. We were about to start the evidence on Friday. One of the defendants said, we'd like to settle. Said, great, we'll take your money for the televisions. Then we gave them a release for televisions. We then went on to deal with the arbitration issues, which was a separate issue, a separate claim. What we have here at the end of the day is a question of res judicata, which is a doctrine of fairness. And the question is, if there's any doubt about whether or not the issue was actually submitted under the Roberto case, we should prevail. This argument that we needed to do something to carve it out is just wrong. The issues were not in front of the district court. The issue that arose in the arbitration, and which we have here, is an issue that arises under the arbitration agreement, which is a separate contract that was never novated or released. The express intent of the parties was only to provide a release and a license for televisions and not for monitors. The agreement states that no license is granted directly, indirectly, by implication, estoppel or otherwise, beyond the express terms hereof, and nothing herein shall under any circumstance entitle any party to grant any sub-license or seller service of founder. There is nothing in this agreement that they can point to show an intent to give them a release from the arbitration agreement. If they had wanted a release from the arbitration claims, they would have asked for it, and we would have said no, and we would have gone to trial, and we would have gotten a final judgment.
They do point to the integration clause in the settlement agreement, and you think that does not wipe out the prior arbitration agreement?
It only relates to the subject matter hereof, which is defined as in this agreement. We had a prior license, which is still in effect. If they want to claim it's not in effect, then I guess we can go back and sue them for damages for all of their monitors. There's no intent here to negate the arbitration agreement. It doesn't relate to the same subject matter as what's being released.
Okay.
Any more questions? Okay, thank you, Mr. Black. Mr. Hacker.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of points. First of all, in terms of the burden about being clear, to the extent there's an ambiguity, my colleague mentioned the Liberto case, saying that you're supposed to resolve in favor of non-preclusion. If you look at Liberto, it proves our point, because the whole problem there was that the settlement agreement didn't say anything about dismissal of prejudice. The court says, we can't tell, there wasn't adjudication of liability here because it was just a settlement that talked about other things, and so they apply the rule. When there is dismissal of prejudice, the rule is just the opposite, and this court said so in Pactive, but they've got the burden exactly backwards.
Are the monitors and the televisions based on the same nucleus of operative facts?
I would say no, Your Honor. There's
okay.
But there's... So
the Fifth Circuit uses a transactional inquiry.
Right. That's true, but the point is the arbitration agreement and the claims relating to the monitors are based on the same nucleus of operative facts. That's why the arbitration claims arising from the arbitration are also precluded, because they're the same claims. My colleague makes a point, I think it's going to Your Honor's questions, about Section 1.7 with respect to that section is dealing with a license. We don't dispute that. It's only about the license, so you can't, it's not
a definitional section.
Right. That's defining licensed products. That's exactly what it's doing. It's not defining the claims that will be dismissed. Those are discussed elsewhere, and the language is all claims will be dismissed. You don't need a license for the... It wouldn't make sense to get a license for the monitors because there was an existing license. And look, Your Honor, if you will, at the arbitration agreement.
It says definitions.
Right.
There's a separate within it. One of the definitions is of licensed products. Another definition is of television. They're two separate things within the definitional section.
Right, and you read those together, and what it's excluding are televisions from the licensed products, or vice versa. The monitors are excluded from the licensed products because the licensed products only goes to televisions. There's no question here that the license doesn't encompass monitors. The question here is whether dismissal of all claims encompasses the claims addressed to monitors, and it does.
So you're saying that even though there was a pre-existing license, that by that dismissal of claims meant that they intended to walk away from their right to damages as it relates to that license?
That's correct, Your Honor, because it's a payment. There's a payment in the settlement agreement for many dollars. It's right there on page 395. The claims relating to the monitors, they're just money claims. My opponent suggests that it's interesting that there was no license, but if you look at the arbitration agreement, which was supposed to resolve this, there wouldn't have been a license there either. There was no chance a license is going to come out of this for the monitor claims because there's already a fully existing
license. Right, and that arbitration agreement specifically states that the Texas litigation as it relates to the monitor claims would be dismissed.
Right, which was the party's intention at the time, and then that didn't happen. The court stated, for whatever reason, actually the other side opposed our effort to dismiss the entire litigation, and you know, we're not successful on that. The court stated, under the Supreme Court case in Anaconda and the Fifth Circuit case in the Jolly case, staying jurisdiction, staying the claims, keeps jurisdiction of the court over the claims to deal with them as necessary later. Here was necessary to deal with them by dismissing them pursuant to the unambiguous terms of the settlement agreement.
Was it Judge Gilstrap's decision that said that the dismissal entry was not intended to encompass the monitor claims? Wasn't that akin to his readjusting the judgment or refining the judgment under 60B?
We submit no, because he didn't do that, and it was not asked to do it. All he did was misread and misunderstand with respect to the settlement agreement by reading the settlement agreement to be limited to television licenses, when it is in fact limited to television licenses, But there's a separate part of the agreement which requires dismissal of all claims with prejudice because they've been completely resolved by the parties. The arbitration agreement is also expressly addressed in the settlement agreement because of the integration clause, which specifically
says... But it does say relating to the subject matter here,
exactly.
Which ties it back into the settlement agreement. So that integration clause really doesn't get you very far unless you conclude that the settlement agreement was intended to encompass monitor claims.
But you can only tell that from the terms of the settlement agreement. Subject matter here is defined in the preamble. I urge the court to look at the preamble of the loss of the settlement agreement. One paragraph mentions the license and release for televisions. That's fine. But another paragraph says that the parties intend to resolve the lawsuit, which is defined as the above caption action between the parties. So it unambiguously says our intent here is to resolve the lawsuit. Again, if the parties intended to resolve part of the lawsuit, to resolve certain claims, to resolve the claims related to the licenses as here and above defined, Your Honor, then you would say that. But the law is clear, the settlement is clear, that all claims will be dismissed with prejudice. The consequence follows that all claims are precluded. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hacker and Mr. Black. The case is taken under submission.